Today is June 5th, 2009, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 151. That's 151 backwards. Podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, cheese tester. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And I'm going to try to get this next part right, folks, because I missed it last time. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com.
Yay! I did it.
You did it. That's great. And I'm thinking, just to be on the safe side, we should probably just buy that other domain and point it back to Mac Observer.
Because yes, awr.com is surely available.
Oh, no doubt. And if it's not, I bet we can pick it up for really cheap.
Well, you can follow our efforts to get awr.com, even though, you know, we're soon going to be changing the name.
We are. I can't wait till we decide what it's going to be.
You know, I've heard the music for our theme song.
You're a step ahead of me because I have not heard the new theme song yet.
I know I am a step. Anyway, you can follow our efforts to get awr.com, even though we're not really going to try, through Twitter. I'm at TMO Brian. That's TMOBRYAN. And how about you, Jeff?
I'm at J Gamet. That's JGAMET. And we have another Twitter account to throw at everyone this week, too.
Please tell.
Okay, so the deal is that if you want to follow live what's going on at the different events we go to, sign up for Mac Observer Live on Twitter. And that's the place where when we do our live streaming from events, you'll be able to see all those notes that we're streaming out at that Twitter account as well.
Oh, that's very, very good. You know, I'm going to be honest. We do live coverage better than everybody else. Just,
you know, we really do kick ass live coverage.
We're good. So, if you like to follow our live coverage, but you can't do the webpage or whatever reason, being able to do it through Twitter is kind of handy. Gotta love all these new technologies that are, new platforms that are coming out for, doing stuff on the interwebs.
You know, it really is nifty. And it's great because it gives everyone so much flexibility. If you're someplace where you can't follow on the web, you can follow on Twitter. And, yeah, it's great.
By the way, I did get a couple of emails from people asking how the recording went. And so after we did our last episode, I spent 3 days in the studio with my band. And we have one more session that we're doing this weekend, the day before the keynote, actually. And we should be done recording at that point.
That's fantastic. And I want to point out that if you're following Brian on Twitter, you will be getting info live from the recording studio.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, and actually, I think you also need to be following Atomic Love Bombs on Twitter for some of that.
It is at Atomic Love Bombs.
Yeah, and that's where I got to see some of the candid photos of Brian totally playing the hell out of his guitar.
And the rest
in the studio.
The rest of the band. The rest of the band was not playing my guitar. Anyway, yeah. Thanks for the plug,
right,
Jeff. You are the best.
You know, that's what I do.
All right. Well, I guess we should get to it, huh?
I think so. Apple is looking at a Department of Justice investigation into its hiring practices. The Lawsuit Express made another stop in Marshall, Texas, this time to pick up a company called Actis. SciStar's legal pot dried up. And iPhone owners might see surprise App Store charges soon. Steve Jobs is on track to return to work. North Carolina is gearing up for a server farm, Apple style. Apple's Fifth Avenue store is rolling in the dough. WWDC is just around the corner. And, sad but true, so is Windows 7.
Oh, that makes me laugh. The Department of Justice has launched a probe into the hiring practices of companies like Apple, Google, Genentech, Yahoo, and other high-tech powerhouses. The DOJ is concerned that the firms in question are negotiating agreements on the recruiting and hiring of one another's employees, and that such arrangements could be stifling competition. Tech companies have often preyed upon each other, looking to hire top talent for themselves, or in some cases, just trying to deprive the competition of that top talent. Such hiring wars can be disruptive to the corporate giants, but the DOJ sees them as a fundamental aspect of both competition and a balance on the side of employees when it comes to pay. Thus, it's interesting whether or not such gentlemen's agreements on corporate rating are stifling said competition.
Apple, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and several other companies recently found themselves on the receiving end of a lawsuit from Actis, claiming they... Yeah, that Actis. No, I've never heard of them either. Anyhow, Actis claimed that they used patent technology without authorization in their online store payment systems. Actis is alleging that it owns the concept of storing data so customers can make online purchases after creating a user account. So Apple and its friends need to pay up. Like nearly every other company, Actis filed its suit in the patent case-friendly town of Marshall, Texas. The U.S. District Court offices in Marshall have a reputation of favoring plaintiffs in patent violation cases. The Actis patents, titled Method and Apparatus for Conducting Electronic Commerce Transactions Using Electronic Tokens, describe a system where shoppers buy or rent products online using a prepaid account or store credit card information. Actis points specifically to Apple's online store, the iTunes store, and what it calls the quote-unquote iPhone apps store as violating its patents. The company is asking the court to award it repayment for legal expenses along with damages.
You know, Jeff, what's interesting is that Amazon owns a patent for one-click ordering.
Yeah, how about that?
Apple licenses that particular patent. Just evidence for how messed up the patent system is right now, especially when it comes to software patents.
Yeah, you got to love Marshall, Texas.
Got to love the folks in Marshall. By the way, I do not plan on driving through Marshall.
I think that's for the best. You'd probably find yourself on the wrong end of a patent suit for driving a car with the gas pedal on the right.
That someone's going to take offense to anything I may or may not have said at some point.
You know, if that's the case, we both need to be worried about every place we go. I'm just saying.
Good point. Financial records that SciStar filed in its bankruptcy case show the company was faced with steep legal fees, but didn't reveal that other companies were funding its court costs. The company found itself on the wrong end of an Apple lawsuit for selling PCs with macOS 10 installed, and many have been speculating that other companies were funding SciStar's legal defense for some unspecified nefarious purpose. According to documents filed in its bankruptcy case, the company owes nearly $95,000 in legal fees, which, although not a whole lot in the realm of corporate legal fees, doesn't necessarily include anything the company has already paid for its attorneys. What isn't evident in the documents, however, are the names of any companies that could have been funding SciStar's defense against Apple, and popular speculation has suggested that without outside assistance, SciStar could not have come up with the money to pay its own legal expenses. While it's possible that SciStar found a way to hide the backers that speculators have been assuming were funding the company, the company's required bankruptcy documents appear to make it more likely that the company simply burned through its own nest egg.
Apple's iPhone Software 3.0 update will be loaded with great new features, but charging to re-download applications may not leave a smile on users' faces. Apparently, the beta version of the software update adds a dialogue that warns users they will be charged full price for applications they downloaded on their iPhone, even if the app was previously downloaded.
Ooh. Oh, God, the audience.
No,
like
they
that.
Don't. Just so you know, we're just the messengers, okay?
Yeah, I don't blame them.
Now, the dialogue appears when users attempt to download an application via Wi-Fi, 3G, or Edge. Applications that users re-download via iTunes on their computer, however, won't be subject to the extra charge, which may be an indication that Apple is concerned about wireless bandwidth usage, or possibly that users are trying to work around paying for applications by using other people's iTunes accounts. The move to charge users over and over for handheld downloads could also be a sign that their Grinch heart shrank a size today.
Steve Jobs is on track to return to Apple at the end of June, according to sources cited by the Wall Street Journal. One of those sources said that Mr. Jobs' return to health was, quote-unquote, coming along, and that, quote, He was one real sick guy. Fundamentally, he was starving to death over a 9-month period. He couldn't digest protein, but he took corrective action, unquote. Still, don't expect him at Monday's WWDC keynote event, but the journal did say that Apple was trying to coordinate his return with a product launch or other special event. Accordingly, let the speculation for new Macs, iPod Super Touches, or a Roomba buyout begin apace.
You know, I'd buy a Roomba if it had an Apple logo on it.
Exactly, exactly.
All right. North Carolina put to rest the poorly kept secret that it passed legislation to lure Apple into the state when Governor Bev Perdue revealed that Apple will be locating a new server farm in her state. As part of the tax incentive deal, Apple is expected to invest some $1 billion in the state as part of a 9-year project. The tax incentives could save Apple about $46 million over the next 10 years and up to $300 million over the next 30 years. Apple hasn't yet said how it plans to use its server farm.
Apple's Fifth Avenue retail location rakes in some $440 million per year, according to the New York Post. In an article looking at the retail business of downtown Manhattan, the newspaper cited a third-party prospectus that revealed Apple's retail sales at the location. In comparison, Apple's other flagship store in New York City, its Soho store, is slumming in the, you know, the $100 million range.
Yes, yes. Good.
That's just gross. $100 million? I mean, that's embarrassing. Yeah. For those working out the numbers in their head, if the Post's numbers are correct, the Fifth Avenue Apple store is bringing in an average of $1.2 million in sales each and every day, numbers the Post referred to as mind-boggling.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
And we're recording this on Friday, June 5th, and Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference, or WWDC, begins Monday, June 8th. The short version is that we don't expect Apple CEO Steve Jobs to appear at the event because, as noted earlier, he's expected to go back to work later this month. That said, if he does make an appearance at the WWDC, there will be a riot, a fun geeky riot. The company is expected to release, or at least show, new iPhones and show off more of iPhone software 3.0 along with some macOS 10.6 or Snow Leopard features. Other than that, we don't yet know what will happen, but stay tuned to our next episode for full coverage of everything WWDC related. And I totally should have said that line like the old Batman series. I
yes.
should have.
You should have. Darn, it's too late. We close out this week's news section with the news that every boy and girl has been awaiting with bated breath.
Oh.
That's right, kids. It turns out that Santa Claus is real after all. And this year he's going to be bringing you a very special present, Windows 7. That's because the gnomes in Redmond have been working hard, and Microsoft announced this week that Windows 7 would ship October 22nd, just in time for the Christmas holiday shopping season, because really, who doesn't want to unwrap the incredibly hard-to-get-into packaging for a Microsoft operating system? I can just picture it now. Christmas tree is lit. If it's my mom's house, the local electric company probably had to fire up an extra generator just for all the lights on her tree. The fire is crackling, and kids are tumbling down the stairs in anticipation of all those presents. Oh. I can see it now.
I can't wait. I wonder what
Billy, Steven, one at a time.
Make sure to fold up the wrapping paper and put the wrapping paper in the bag.
What the f*** is this? Windows 7? Mom? Dad? You got me Windows f***ing 7? What the f*** is wrong with you? What, did the Grinch store run out of coal? I thought you loved me, Mom?
Oh man, that's just ugly.
Oh, ouch.
They did not sound happy.
No, that's just not right.
Oh, I think there's going to be some really unhappy boys and girls on the morning of December 25th.
Yeah, well, it could have been worse. It could have been a Zune.
Very, very good point. You know, I had a friend remark to me We were talking about the SanDisk CEO saying that that you can't out iPod the iPod, and conceding that Apple pretty much won that war. And he said, you know, I saw someone using a Zune once. Where was that? Oh, yeah, it was at a poker table. It's like, you know, he saw one person using a Zune, and it was memorable enough to have remembered it.
Wow.
And by the way, in further news, Microsoft also announced that they're going to be disabling beta copies of Windows 7 that are out there on July 1st. I guess that's good news.
So it seems.
That sound means that it's time for the Context Machine, and that's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. And I don't know, man, I kind of want to start with SciStar.
All right, then let's start with SciStar. I'm easy.
Fair enough. That's what I hear. That's what she said.
Oh, man, I didn't realize that was on YouTube. My bad.
No, you know, there was a short period of time, just a very short period of time, where I was thinking that, yeah, you know, there could be something to these conspiracy rumors. Maybe someone is behind SciStar. And the only reason I thought that is because it just seems so stupid. And the only reason why it seemed like, you know, someone could be doing something so stupid was because someone else had some kind of a nefarious scheme to basically strip away Apple's control over the whole widget. But, you know, just the more I think about it, they're just stupid.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking that the whole conspiracy theory thing isn't going to hold water anymore. And if we look at the easiest answer, it's most likely the right answer also.
Occam's razor.
Yes. And in this case, the easy answer is they burned through whatever money they could get a hold of, and the case didn't work out the way they were hoping.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if Deep Pockets were ever funding that company, I think they would have gotten better attorneys. Because these attorneys have been, I'm not some kind of legal expert, but everything that has been reported on what SciStar's attorneys have done, it's near moronic.
You know, I'm not an attorney, although I did play one on stage once, and I have to concur, this just doesn't seem like a good way for a legal defense to be mounted.
Mm-hmm. And or an offense, too, because they did countersue.
That's true, and we saw how that worked out.
Yeah, they accused Apple of being a monopoly, which is just, I mean, I can see how a five-year-old could buy into that argument.
Sure.
Maybe even a 9-year-old. But it doesn't freaking hold water to, say, reality.
Right. And, you know, the legal team that was representing SciStar, they've had to go up against Apple before, so you'd think they would know.
You would think they would know. And, you know, I mean, you know, we have no idea what's going on behind the scenes. We don't know if say, some attorneys... you know, if SciStar went out shopping for attorneys that said that they could win, or, you know, we just don't know. But I mean, I don't think there's anyone behind this company. I think that if there was someone behind this company, they would have hired better attorneys and done a better job and made better arguments than they have. I think that this is just a company that thought they could get away with something and you know, thought they had some kind of argument, and they just don't.
Yeah, I have to agree. And before these documents were released, of course, it was a lot easier to speculate that maybe there was someone behind SciStar simply because of the amount of money involved in funding a legal battle like this.
I mean, it doesn't seem like it's been all that much money.
Well, you know, that the what is it, $88,000?
$95,000
that they owe. Well, that could just simply be what they still owe.
True, it could be, but even if it is, I mean, you know, you have to look at the fact that the company CEO loaned his company. You know, it's something that small companies do all the time. That officers right. in the company will you know, loan the company money to float it for whatever reason. He's only loaned them. Floated $120,000, I think it is. And
right.
$95,000 just isn't a lot of money when you're talking about the kind of legal battle that is required. And I mean, I could see that $95,000 covering just the things that Apple throws at them that's intended simply to cost them money, let alone all the research that would need to be done in order to mount a true offensive campaign.
Right. And when you go into a legal battle like this, you can't go halfway. You need to commit to letting your legal team do whatever it takes, and you spend whatever it costs.
Right.
And I have a feeling that's not how this legal strategy went.
Right. Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see it. I guess the reality could be that the folks behind SciStar are so brilliant and so good that they're able to completely hide. But I don't know. I think that we should bury that particular cat or some other analogy. Let's bury that cat. Oh, yeah, that's what everyone says. Man, oh, we're trying to bury that cat. So I don't know. I don't think there's anything here.
I have to agree, and I'm going to take that a step farther and say not only is there nothing here, there's nothing in their bank account either.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. You know, they just can't have been selling all that many machines to begin with, and especially you know at the margins, the non-existent margins that entire industry of PC clones functions on. You know, there's you just don't accumulate much cash flow.
No, and then considering the fact that, they can't pay the companies that supply them with parts, mm-hmm. means that they're going to end up having to pay a premium for those parts and pay up front.
Right.
So I'm sure that they're having to pay, just relatively speaking, through the nose for the parts that they have to still purchase so that they can fulfill the orders that they've taken.
Speaking of paying through the nose, have you ever been to the Fifth Avenue Apple Store?
Frackin' brilliant. No, I have not.
I went there once. It was Sunday. It was raining. It was in March, so it was cold, and it was like 6:30 p.m. on a Sunday evening. Place was packed. I mean, just wall-to-wall people.
You know, I'm not surprised because that's kind of a little Apple nexus right there. If you think about where it sits, meaning in New York City, which is a place, it's a destination all around the world. Mm-hmm. And then here you have this Apple store, which is a destination in and of itself, and it's open 24 hours a day.
Right.
But that doesn't surprise me.
There's not a lot of other shopping going on at 6:30 on a Sunday on Fifth Avenue because most of the stores are... You know, they're high-end retail stores, and they tend to close on Sunday evening. So, I mean, I honestly found the fact that it was packed full of people to be stunning. And, you know, within that context, maybe it shouldn't be much of a surprise as to how much money that store brings in. But, I mean, almost a half a billion dollars a year going through that one single store. I mean, that is... it's just outrageous, man.
It is. I mean, that is a lot of money. And you have to keep in mind that it's not just high-ticket items going out the door. There's people that are buying headsets and software and right. backpacks.
Right, right. And actually, I wonder, well, what is that per hour? We didn't do that particular math.
No, we didn't.
So 1.2
But I bet you have a calculator handy.
I do.
Do some ciphering, man. I want to know what those numbers are.
Equals, so it's, 50 grand. $50,000 an hour.
$50,000 an hour.
Divided by 60 or $833 a minute.
Wow.
It's a good gig if you can get it.
No kidding. So that's a little over a Mac Mini every minute.
Yeah. Every minute. Or not quite a MacBook, the plastic MacBook.
Right. Wow. That is a fracking lot of money going through that store.
Yes, it is.
You know, and when you take into account that other retailers are having to deal with with weaker sales, that makes the sales at the Fifth Avenue Apple Store even that much more amazing.
Well, actually, we should address that because – so where these numbers came from basically is some third party – realtor or you know someone involved in the business of high-end retailing space, so to call them a realtor is not really accurate. They have a perspective on another space that cites the that Apple store is doing $440 million a year. So this is that's how we get this information. It's not coming from Apple. It's coming indirectly through, you know, probably through the landlords that actually own that space.
Okay, and that's an important thing to note. You're right, because Apple does not give out figures for individual store sales.
Right. The but the other thing to remember is that we don't know what year that was. We don't know exactly how, you know, it could have been that could, for instance, could be an annualized figure based only on the December quarter. We don't. Okay. You know, it could be. We don't really know. So we can't look at those numbers and say everybody else is sucking wind and but Apple's bringing all this money in right now because we just don't know when those numbers came from.
Okay, that's a good clarification. And so that now tempers my wow, but it's still a pretty big wow.
Yeah, it's still a stunning wow. It's still a stunning wow. And you know I remember when Apple announced that store, I was just kind of thinking that it was, you know, a vanity store at best. But you know, having actually been there last year and you know, seeing these kinds of numbers, it's, you know, clearly was a fantastic investment for the company.
You know, I'm thinking that it'd be really cool if one of the user groups out there asked me to come out and speak so that I'd have a good excuse to go see that store.
There you go. I like it.
All right. So call me.
Call Jeff.
And I'll come out and speak and we'll go.
I have Blondie
and...
going through my head right now. I wish you could play that, but you know, royalties and all.
That's right. And yeah.
And permission.
And all that.
Yep. Speaking of royalties, we have to pay the bills too.
We do.
So it seems like this is a great time to talk about this week's sponsor, which is Audible.
And I just want to point out that you are on a segue roll today. Wow.
Yeah, it's that associative mind I have. Everything is associative in my head. I think of one thing, it makes me think of another. Be that as it may, this is my opportunity to talk about one of my favorite books, one of my favorite authors.
I can't wait to hear. Ooh, Sparkledies. Okay, now we know how mine works.
That was funny. All right, so the book that I am talking about in my book report for this week is Hyperion by Dan Simmons. Hyperion is a science fiction book. It's one of the best books I've read. Certainly one of the best science fiction books I've read. It actually was written some time ago. I believe it came out in 89. If it wasn't 89, it was 90. And it's you know, Dan Simmons is a wonderful author. He has the ability to make his characters be alive, and that's one of the same things I liked about the way Martin writes. You know, each one of Dan's characters has its own voice, and the story of Hyperion is sort of a reinterpretation of the Canterbury Tales, or at least a use of the Canterbury vehicle of telling an ongoing story by having people who are traveling together tell their past.
Okay.
And I've read this book many times, and I can't wait to finish the Audible version of it, just because, you know, it gives me another excuse to be able to get into that world for a little bit. And it's actually there's Hyperion and the Fall of Hyperion. Dan wrote them to be one book. The publishers wanted to divide them in two, as publishers are wont to do. And, you know, they're both just fantastic. Hyperion by Dan Simmons. Let's go ahead and listen to a clip. This is going to be a clip from basically sort of the beginning of the book, talking about the main character.
Cool.
The consul awoke with the peculiar headache, dry throat, and sense of having forgotten a thousand dreams, which only periods in cryogenic fugue could bring. He blinked, sat upright on a low couch, and groggily pushed away the last sensor tapes clinging to his skin. There were two very short crew clones, and one very tall, hooded Templar with him in the windowless ovoid of a room. One of the clones offered the consul the traditional post-thaw glass of orange juice. He accepted it and drank greedily.
"The tree is 2 light minutes and 5 hours of travel from Hyperion," said the Templar.
This gives you some idea of the way it's being paced. I do like the narrator, or not the narrator, the reader, the voice actor who's doing.
There we go, voice actor.
Yeah. Actually, there's several voice narrators on this one. There's Mark Vietor, Allison Johnson, Kevin Pariseau, and Jay Snyder, and Victor Bayon. And it's partly because the book is told through the eyes of several people.
Okay, so that makes sense. And it sounds really interesting. I'm betting,
really,
though, unlike the Canterbury Tales, there's no tragic yet humorous accident involving a hot poker.
This is correct, although one of the characters is both very comic and very tragic.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
he actually cracks me up. There's in this, so this is, you can consider this a warning, but I actually consider it a teaser. There is one of the best expletive strings I have ever encountered in my life when this one character starts insulting someone else. It is the most brilliant string of profanity that I've just ever encountered. It's just awesome.
You know, that's reason enough to get the book right there.
It is. And so if our listeners follow the link that we have in the show notes, they can actually get this book for free.
Sweet. You know, that's my favorite price.
It's my favorite prices too. And tell them how they do that, Jeff.
Okay, so what you need to do is hop over to the URL that we'll have on the TMO website.
Yeah, audiblepodcast.com/AWR.
Thanks for covering for me, pal.
Mm-hmm.
And sign up for your free account, and you can download this book or any other nearly any other that suits your fancy, and enjoy it.
Yep, you get to keep it whether or not you stay a membership. So you sign up for the gold membership, you get to download the book, get it free. And you can also subscribe to newspapers. You can download podcasts. There's all kinds of things you can do through Audible.
Right.
They're good people. They make a good product. And if you like to listen to books, or if you have a lot of travel time a lot of commute time, or you know, if you've got a trip, I may or may not have a trip to Australia coming up.
And
I guarantee you
cool.
that I will have at least one Audible book with me for that 17-hour flight.
And you better have something like a Mophie juice pack with you, too.
Oh, for sure. Maybe a couple of them, but that's another issue.
Yeah.
That's another issue. So, all right, that's our sponsor this week, folks at Audible, and check them out.
Okay, cool. And do you have anything else that you really want to talk about this week?
I don't know. What do you think about the DOJ thing? I think maybe we should talk a little bit about that.
Okay, we can do that.
I'm sorry, I didn't have a brilliant segue for that one.
Well, I led into it quite nicely for you, I thought.
You did. Your segue was very pleasant.
It was. It was conversational.
So I noticed that a lot of readers sort of lashed out at the DOJ for, basically wasting time.
You know, if they are wasting time, then shame on them. If they're doing what their job description is, okay, then good for them for doing what they're supposed to do.
Well, so let's actually talk about a little bit about that. And we're going to enter the realm of politics a little bit, not in a we're going to enter the realm of politics a little bit. So what we've dealt with for the last 20 years, probably maybe 30 years, has been a series of often accelerating laissez-faire treatment of a lot of things. And that was a little bit less so under the Clinton administration, although the Clinton administration was still fairly laissez-faire, especially for a Democratic Party administration. Note that it was the Clinton administration that went after Microsoft for abusing its monopoly power.
Oh, yes, that's true. It was. And, yeah.
And it was the Bush administration that punted on that situation and basically allowed a completely worthless settlement to be reached with Microsoft after the remedy, but not the conviction, was overturned by an appeals court.
Yeah. Okay. So, but from Microsoft's perspective, it was a fair and reasonable agreement.
Of course. And this is basically just simply talking about philosophy here, because the Bush administration had a very laissez-faire approach to business. They felt that the marketplace could regulate itself and do its own thing, and that was the best way to allow the economy to move forward. That you know, a lot of people subscribe to that philosophy. I'm actually, believe it or not, a lot closer to that philosophy than some people might think. And what we're seeing right now with the new administration is that they're probably going to be a little bit more in the face of business when it comes to the way they're conducting business.
Now, if so, my expectation would be that we'll probably see a flurry of investigations like this so that the Department of Justice can kind of clear out the cobwebs and figure out what's going on. And then as things stabilize under the new way of doing things, the number of investigations will probably drop off some, simply because all the corporations that would likely be investigated will know how the rules are now, and they'll kind of get in line and things will smooth out.
Right. And the reason why we mention these political aspects of this is not so much to get into the political aspect of it, it's not to condemn one administration or the other, but it's simply to explain that a lot of what may be seeming to come out of the blue is because there are new people making decisions with different philosophies on how to govern.
You know, and
like it or not.
Right. And that pretty much stands to reason, because when you have an administration change, if that administration has a different philosophy compared to the previous one, you're going to see a lot of things happen that weren't happening before. And right. And the other side of that is certain things that were happening before may not happen now.
Right. This is very true. So let's actually get into the specifics of this one, of this particular issue, which is whether or not Apple and Google, for instance, are stifling competition by agreeing not to poach each other.
You know, that's kind of a tough one. Because agreeing to work together and not strip away each other's top talent isn't necessarily an antitrust or monopoly kind of move, unless they're doing that with the intent of controlling the market in that dark, evil, nefarious way.
Something can stifle competition without it being antitrust.
That's right. And that's okay, because that's part of how the market works.
Actually, technically that's not okay, because stifling competition is still supposed to be a no-no.
Yeah, and see, now we get back into that murky area where the legal system has to figure out what's okay and what's not.
Right.
Because if you allow the market to do what it's going to do, you will have monopolies. But a monopoly in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing.
Right. Microsoft was gone after and convicted for abusing its monopoly power.
Right. That's where the problem comes in.
Right.
And yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's exactly that is actually where the problem comes from. It's the whole stifling competition. You know, what Microsoft did, and I actually use Microsoft as an example in our news coverage of this, looking at the way they dealt with Borland. Microsoft, when so Borland made a set of developer tools under the Turbo name.
Right.
Right.
Ah, the good old days.
Ah, the good old days, back in the 90s and 80s. And they were king poop when it came to development. If you wanted to develop for Windows, you were likely using Borland's Turbo series of products. And the thing is that there's a lot of money to be made selling developers the tools to develop. For instance, the great folks at CodeWarrior saved Apple's bacon by having great development tools when Apple dropped the ball.
Yeah. Actually, back in my days when I would do some coding, I used Code Warrior.
Well, everybody bloody well used Code Warrior because Apple didn't have any good tools. Apple, of course, changed that, said, thanks for saving our ass for, a decade or so, Code Warrior, now get the hell out of our way. And came out with their own. I think that Apple's development tools today are just fantastic.
They are, and it was, in my opinion, necessary for Apple to make that step, and then to do the next thing they did, which was just say, here, if you buy Mac OS X, hey, you've got developer tools.
Right. Right.
I think that was an important move at the time.
Certainly, absolutely important move. Now, Microsoft wanted Borland's business, and they wanted control over those development tools, over what its developers were using. But rather than just simply developing great tools and letting them speak for themselves, they went after Borland's top executives and top engineers. And they would offer them what were then outrageous amounts of money to move over to Microsoft. And, let's say at that time that the executives were making $100,000, right? Well, they would offer them $500,000 to move over to Microsoft. And, of course, they had the pockets to support this. And it culminated with Microsoft offering the last key VP. He was dedicated to Borland. Or supposedly was dedicated to Borland. I don't know him personally, although I did get some of this from Dale Yoakam at the Computer Museum Apple reunion that happened about 5 years ago.
Oh,
anyway,
okay.
Microsoft offered this guy, I believe it was $1 million signing bonus, $1 million a year, something to that effect, and he didn't have to show up for work for a year. As long as he would leave Borland.
I have to say, I think I just found the line where I could be bought, even by Microsoft.
Well, exactly. I mean, what the hell are you supposed to do? You owe it to your family to provide for them. Anyway, Microsoft was able to do that, of course, because it was supported by its, monopoly in operating systems, and at that time, operating systems and office productivity suites. But anyway, that's a kind of predatory thing that can happen. It was very Borland ended up, they changed their name to Emprise for a while. They were doing some enterprise, basically some kind of a infrastructure support or something like that, and eventually changed their name back to Borland. They dumped their IDE. They're not even in the IDE business anymore, the integrated development environment business. And, they're just gone. And it was because Microsoft was able to poach everybody. And that's a very disruptive thing. And you look at a company like Google and Apple, two companies that work closely together, that share some board members, and now compete in one particular area, which is cell phones, which is a small portion of both of their businesses.
Right.
It's a bigger portion of Apple's business, of course. And them having agreements not to poach each other is very, very good for both companies because they just don't have to worry about it.
And I agree. I think that this is a situation where the companies agreeing not to snatch up each other's employees and not play that whole employee shifting game makes sense. And I don't see that as a monopoly abuse. I just see that as a common sense thing for both companies.
It is for both companies. Now, how does it affect employees? Because now there is some artificial limitation on the salaries that employees might be able to command.
Yeah. Now we're back to that fine line again.
Yeah, exactly. And in addition, you've got other small companies not able to, who again are being, potential competitors is I think it's there's a term for it. I forget what that term is, but these other companies aren't participating in these gentlemen's agreements. So now, how are they being unfairly hurt? How in their ability to compete because they're not part of these gentlemen's agreements? That's what the DOJ is concerned about. And yes, it is meddling. And yes, it is better for Microsoft. I'm sorry. Well, it'd be better for Microsoft. It's better for Google. It's better for Apple, Yahoo, Genentech, whomever, to have these gentlemen agreements out there. But does that necessarily mean it's better for the consumer? Does that mean it's better for competition? Does that mean it's better for employees? Not necessarily. And that's what they're investigating. And while it kind of drives me nuts to a certain extent, I also understand why it's being done.
Yeah. And what I hope is that this is simply the Department of Justice doing what it's supposed to do with its routine investigations, and not a sign that the government wants to really start meddling in the administrative processes of corporations in the United States.
Yes. Yeah. You know, the tech industry in the United States has benefited from the largely laissez-faire approach that administrations going back at least to Reagan, including Clinton, have the laissez-faire approach that those administrations have used. High tech has benefited from that, and I think that it will continue to benefit from that. By and large, I believe that the marketplace is a good regulator, but I also think that there is a regulatory role for a government to have, to wit, our current economic crisis.
Yeah, and you know, and if you look at governments throughout history and economic structures throughout history, the whole idea of a true laissez-faire approach to business never has seemed to really work. There's always been some level of government involvement. So realistically, the thing is, can we get
not if you like rat terror in your butter.
More roughage.
That's the image from an 1890s political cartoon that has stayed with me since ninth grade history.
Yeah, well, there you go. And so we have to accept that government and business will be intertwined in some fashion. So the trick is finding that that stable point in the middle where we have that reasonable amount of government involvement without having too much of a controlling interest in what the companies are doing.
Right. And it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. I hope that it's not too disruptive. My guess is that, I don't really know how it's going to work out. I guess we'll just have to see. And with that, though, Jeff, we need to wrap it up.
I think we do. All right, so if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/jgamut. And don't forget, we also have our live event coverage now at Mac Observer Live on Twitter.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/tmobrian. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
Yep, you'll see us online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.